This is Ozarks at Large. A new release from the University of Arkansas Press reaches back more than 80 years for a memoir that itself stretches back to the middle of the 19th century. Back Yonder, an Ozark Chronicle, is Wayman Hoag's accounting of life as a boy in post-Civil War Arkansas. Hoag was born in 1868, and he lived until 1965. Much of his adult life was spent in Memphis, where he worked as an artist and salesman. Back Yonder, when first published in 1932, received high praise from the New York Times, but it's all but been forgotten in the decades since. The new publication is the first book in a series called Chronicles of the Ozarks from the University of Arkansas Press, and this edition was edited by Brooks Blevins, the Noel Boyd Professor of Ozark Studies at Missouri State University. Blevins says Wayman Hoag's name has slipped into relative obscurity, and he says even Blevins, a leading Ozark scholar, had to stumble upon the book when he first became acquainted with it about 20 years ago.
And, of course, at that time, I had never heard of Wayman Hoag. And there's even as I got to work editing this this reprint, there was practically no really dependable information out there on him. So he's you know he's definitely not like a Vance Randolph character or something like that where we've written biographies about them, and we seem to know a lot about their lives. He's a pretty obscure character.
You make the case in the foreword to this republishing of Back Yonder that there are more than a few similarities between Wayman Hoag and Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Yeah, it was, one of the things that I was struck by, I had just, as I was working on this last year, that the Pioneer Girl book, the original version of Laura Ingalls Wilder's manuscript came out, the edited version came out, and I got really interested in that, and then I stumbled across a review of her very first book, Laura Ingalls Wilder's very first book, that came out just a few weeks after Wayman Hoag's Back Yonder came out. And in the New York Times, Wayman Hoag's book got a lot more press and a lot more publicity than Laura Ingalls Wilder's book did. It got Hoag's book, Back Yonder, got first page treatment, full page treatment, and Laura Ingalls Wilder's book was tucked away on page 7 or 8, one little paragraph review. And it was interesting that, of course, we all know the story. Everybody's heard of Laura Ingalls Wilder, and practically no one's heard of Wayman Hoag. So the books obviously have a different trajectory from that point forward. But Hoag also, they were roughly the same age, 2 or 3 years difference, both born in sort of semi-frontier areas right after the Civil War, she in Wisconsin, he in Arkansas. And both of them also had daughters who became famous writers, really before the parents, well, in Hoag's case, around the same time that that Wayman Hoag did, his daughter Charlie Mae Simon started to emerge as a budding writer and eventually became a famous author of juvenile literature. And Laura Ingalls Wilder's daughter, Rose Wilder, was quite famous as a writer for several years before anyone knew who Laura Ingalls Wilder was.
So he writes, Wayman Hoag, in Back Yonder, he writes that his family moved deep into the Arkansas Ozarks, that he claims more than 100 miles from Little Rock and more than 80 miles from the nearest railroad. If that's accurate, that's some isolation.
Yeah, it would be very isolated if it were accurate, and that's one of the keys to appreciating the book is that you have to take a lot of this with a grain of salt, and I think a lot of historians like I am, who have not a lot of us have read it as I mentioned earlier, but those of us who have read the book in the past tended to treat it as a sort of a literal memoir of Hoag's life. And one of the things I discovered as I started digging into his life story is that we shouldn't treat the book that way. It's I don't think he meant it to be a literal memoir, even though he doesn't tip anybody off in the book that he does take lots of liberties. But I think he treated the book more as creative nonfiction, or even in a lot of cases just out and out fiction. His boyhood home that was supposedly so isolated would have been isolated by the standards of New York or Pennsylvania or some of those places, but it certainly wasn't the deep, deep Ozarks that he suggested. He actually grew up in rural Faulkner County, which is down in central Arkansas. And if you want to get really technical about it, and this is one of the things I found really interesting about Hoag's story in this book, is that you could argue he didn't even grow up in the Ozarks.
Right.
Which sort of blows up the book a little bit when it's all about Ozark this and Ozark that, and the subtitle is An Ozark Chronicle. And he obviously goes to pains to establish his sort of legitimate connections to the Ozarks, even though there don't really seem to be any. When the Hoags leave Faulkner County, they eventually end up in Perry County, south of the Arkansas River, which at that time, the southern part of Perry County probably could have been considered the Ozarks, because back in those days, the Ouachitas and the Ozarks were kind of lumped together. But it is one of those interesting things that he does kind of set up, much like Laura Ingalls Wilder did in her Little House books. There's all kinds of fiction in those, and she took lots of liberties, and he takes liberties in presenting his family as this kind of prototypical backwoods Ozark family, when what evidence there is of the Hoags certainly doesn't suggest that they lived that way or that they lived somewhere in the heart of the Ozarks, as he would suggest.
So then how much can we take, because he tells us stories about going to school and learning and what it was like there and the chores he had at his home. I mean, the fact of the matter is, he wrote this in 1932. He's talking about growing up, you know, post-Civil War. So those of us in more contemporary times can at least imagine that some of this has to be based in what his life was like.
Yeah, I think the folkways part of the book, and that's the strongest part of the book anyway, the firsthand accounts of, as you say, going to school and life on the farm and different things like that. I think, for the most part, those are based on his own experiences. And the thing about it is, if you're talking about the 1870s and 1880s in rural Arkansas, it wouldn't have been that much different. The experience of a kid wouldn't have been that much different in rural Faulkner County than it would have been in rural Madison County. Certainly, it might be a little flatter in one place and a little more cotton in Faulkner County than in Madison County. But a lot of those folkways were pretty universal for much of the rural South in those days. So that's I don't think he's borrowing someone else's memories there. I think it's his legitimate memories, and how much of it is or isn't unique to the Ozarks doesn't really matter all that much, because in those days, in the late 1800s, we weren't really thinking of the Ozarks as a particularly unique place anyway. So I think you can read and appreciate his memories as pretty legitimate. It's when he gets to talking about specific names and people and places and things like that I think the fiction part comes in.
Obviously, this is a period piece. This is a gentleman born in 1868 talking about the 1860s, 70s, and to some degree 80s. But it's also a period piece in the fact that Wayman Hoag first had Back Yonder published in 1932. And just the fact that it was published and what he thought people wanted to read tells us a little bit, perhaps, about what people thought about the Ozarks in between World War I and World War II.
Right. I think that's really important, and that's part of the reason we wanted to to bring it out in this new series, Chronicles of the Ozarks, from the University of Arkansas Press, is that the period in between the wars, especially starting in the late 1920s and blossoming in the 1930s, was this just this intense interest in the Ozarks and a lot of other regions around the country too. But it's the first time that the Ozarks becomes the focus of lots of nonfiction, if you want to include this, but certainly works by Vance Randolph and Otto Ernest Rayburn and other things, Charles Morrow Wilson, who was from Fayetteville, and other authors. It's also a time when there's more and more fiction coming out about the Ozarks. So it's a time of really when the Ozarks is pretty close to center stage, as close to center stage as it will ever get in American popular culture. And I really think that probably helped factor into Hoag's decision to really play up the Ozark angle on his life story, even if he had to embellish some to do it. I think he well knew, and Charlie Mae Simon, who was starting to sort of get into this herself, both of them knew that was marketable. Things about the Ozarks and things about, especially about that kind of colorful, stereotypical picture of the remote Ozarks, where people barely had any contact with the outside world, really sold in that era. And so I think it's no coincidence that it comes out when it does in 1932, and that it really does hammer that Ozark theme so strongly. It's just a year after Vance Randolph's first book comes out, and both of them are published by New York presses. So these are books that are getting coverage in the major newspapers and magazines of the day.
When we're talking 1930s, we're talking the era of Lum and Abner, who, of course, were in the fictional Jot'em Down store, which is, yes, in the Ouachitas, but many across the country would just place in the Ozarks. I mean, there was a sort of fascination with that, this part of the country.
Sure, sure. And well, as I talked about in my book, Arkansas, Arkansas, you could kind of blow that up to the entire state of Arkansas.
Right.
And I call the 1930s the heyday of the hillbilly. And, you know, not just for Arkansas or the Ozarks, but you can throw Appalachia in there and wherever else hillbillies happen to be hanging around in the 1930s, there was a true fascination with regional types and stereotypes in the 1930s that we probably haven't had since that time and may never have again.
If you and I stop and talk about what we think rural Arkansas or the rural Ozarks were in 1932, not everybody had electricity. I mean, you were still building some places based on the proximity to water. I mean, 1932 seems like eons ago.
Yeah, it sure does. And you know, it's just a reminder to us all that that history and the life ways of peoples are, you know, it's all comparative. It's all constantly in motion. And, you know, we can't imagine a time now in 2016 when people will be saying,
yeah,
well, you know, back in 2016, but that time is going to be here. We're probably not going to be around when people are saying that. But that's how this world works. You move along, and things continuously change and evolve, and so we're fortunate to have these little snapshots of a world that truly is gone.
The name of the book is Back Yonder, an Ozark Chronicle by Wayman Hogue, first published in 1932, now part of the Chronicles of the Ozark series from the University of Arkansas Press, edited by Brooks Blevins, who happens to be the Noel Boyd Professor of Ozark Studies at Missouri State University. As he mentioned, he's the author of the book Arkansas, Arkansas, How Bear Hunters, Hillbillies, and Good Old Boys Defined a State, as well as many other books. Brooks, thank you so much for your time. Congratulations, and thanks for helping bring this back 80-plus years later.
Thanks, Kyle, and thanks for having me on. We'll be right back.